You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. It is 6:06. We hope your day is off to a great start. You are listening to the Civic Media Network, already online. Daniel is telling us, hey, everyone, happy Wednesday. So he is right on top of things this morning. How are you today, Brian?
I'm good, Jamie, and you?
I'm fantastic. Halfway through a week, even with this news cycle, we're making it, right?
Well, yeah. We have no other choice. We have to be here. We have to kind of stay up on this. Some days, yesterday was exhausting and entertaining all at the same time.
Yes.
Entertaining in all the wrong ways. Not in a, you know, I'd rather not be entertained by the double talk and the seeming ineptitude of our administration. And yet here we are.
Yeah.
We've learned that things happened so quickly that we couldn't tell anybody, any U.S. citizens in the Middle East, to get out. Things were happening. So it's almost like it's out of their control.
It's
like, you planned
almost,
it.
Did they? That's the question.
Well,
How much planning actually went into this?
The first part.
Yes.
Drop bombs. Then what? Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
The president surprised that Iran is really retaliating as much as they are. I don't know what he thought was going to happen.
I'm not sure either. And here's the thing, I think, as I was listening to everything coming out yesterday, all of the word salads that this administration was putting out into the universe, the only thing that I kept thinking is, this is why you have career political heads in charge of things. This is why you bring in career administrative people and you don't gut departments, because this is exactly what happens when you have nobody basically leading the charge, especially in what's happening in the Middle East right now.
That is true. And we're going to talk about everything today about Iran. We have local things, the impact of the tariffs on Wisconsin farmers, all of that. I am bolstered to know that this is not just a war. This is a holy war, Jamie.
Yes.
You know, Donald, according to complaints by service members, some leaders, I don't know their ranks. That's why I'm not giving.
Right.
Some people in charge on some military bases are very much framing this as not only a holy war, but that Donald Trump was anointed. One quote was anointed by Jesus. And they are leading us to the end times, and that's scary.
It is very
right?
scary.
I mean, once you make this a biblical war,
right,
a holy war, then how different are you than the regimes in Iran and Iraq that are calling for holy wars?
You don't. I think at that point you're just idolizing a different deity, right? I mean,
right.
Based on
yes.
what the religion is, but it's basically the same thing. It's just a different deity involved at that point.
And it's that white Christian nationalism, because we know this is supposed to be a Christian nationalist country.
Sure.
He said sarcastically.
Mm.
Some other headlines coming out of Iran since we were last together, and maybe since you went to sleep. Israel has said it's begun a 10th wave of strikes in Iran and has also been bombarding Lebanon. The president said Iran's Air Force and Navy have been knocked out. Pardon me if I take that with a huge salt lick, because
yes.
We know also their nuclear program was totally obliterated. He also said the U.S. military has destroyed 17 Iranian ships and nearly 2,000 targets. More than 1,000 people have been killed in Iran since the war began. That's according to U.S.-based human rights activist news agency.
Also in the headlines this morning, the United States has closed embassies in 3 different countries as a result of the attacks. It's reduced its regional diplomatic staffing and warned Americans to leave the region. The United Arab Emirates said that it has opened safe air corridors and that its neighbors as countries rush to evacuate stranded nationals. That's been kind of the big story since yesterday afternoon, because the United States at this point is literally scrambling to get Americans out of the Middle East, because as we were just referring to, there wasn't really a plan in place on what the retaliation, or what this administration thought the retaliation attacks
fast.
Were going to look like.
This whole thing, very
who,
fast.
Who would have known were words that came out of our president's mouth yesterday?
This is the most telling thing I think about not only this war, but the entire administration. I was watching David Muir because, let's face it, he's dreamy.
Yeah.
And
he is.
He had Ian Pannell on from over in, he's somewhere in the region. And he said they were talking about trying to get people out and people not having the ability to get out. He said there is a hotline that you're supposed to call. But when you call that number, the actual message says, do not rely on the U.S. government to help you. And I'm like, dude, that should be on all of our voicemails. Every time you call me, it should just, hi, this is Brian. Don't depend on the U.S. government to help you.
I feel like stamped somewhere. That needs to be like our own personal tagline going forward, which is, let's be realistic, though. How sad is that? We live,
it's
incredibly
sad
and infuriating, and it's frustrating because we should be taking the charge and we should be able to at least get our own citizens out of what looks like going to be a war-torn area. But no, we can't do that either.
Asian stocks fell sharply today, a second sell-off in Seoul as investors fretted about rising oil prices. Trump ordered U.S. insurance guarantees for ships traveling through the Gulf and suggests the Navy would escort tankers through the Strait of Hormuz if necessary. Oh, good. Now we'll take it to the water.
Right.
Well,
and the Strait of Hormuz has officially been closed. We talked about that earlier this week. There are no plans of reopening it anytime soon, which is going to be a story to watch, especially as we're talking oil prices and supply chain issues. Also in headlines, the United States Senate is set to vote today on whether to consider a resolution that would limit President Trump's ability to continue military action in Iran without congressional approval. With obviously this escalating conflict as in the background and, you know, all through those U.S. and Israeli strikes that we've seen over the last few days.
And finally, the last headline, cracks, real big cracks coming from staunch MAGA supporters for Trump. Some of the sharpest criticism is coming from once loyal media figures, far more accomplished or accustomed, rather, to singing his praises. Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Matt Walsh, those are among the big names that are expressing discontent with the president and his actions. And supposedly, according to White House insiders, the president is noticing, which is, they say, causing a lot of this double talk. And he said, and no, I didn't say that. Yes, you did. We have it here. Look at the tape. That's not me. I think it is. No, it's not. We all have heard, even during the first term, that the president does watch TV a lot. And a lot of his decisions come from ideas that he has heard on TV.
Yeah.
And so now that when the lapdogs get off your lap and start nipping at your heels, if I could be folksy for a minute, Jamie, that's bad business.
Well, remember a day and a time when we used to govern because people in those positions actually knew what they were doing and they weren't listening to Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly? I mean, those were the days. I kind of long for them. Cindy and Appleton chiming in on our text line this morning saying, I hope you and everyone listening understands that this Iran war is part of the Orange Maniacs' plan to bring about a national emergency to put a stop to the vote in November. I know that has crossed a lot of minds. I can't say that it hasn't crossed my mind. If you want to chime in this morning, we would sure love to hear from you either by call or text 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. And of course, we'll be watching the headlines. We'll bring you any of the major news if it happens during this show.
Yes, but, let's jump into something that you are,
gerrymandering.
Love talking about gerrymandering.
I do love talking about gerrymandering.
Thing.
I do.
And we also love talking about how the legislature, state assembly, doesn't really have to work. Well, Governor Evers is addressing both of those things, Jamie.
He is. And in fact, yesterday he signed that executive order that he called for during the State of the State address, which basically asked Wisconsin legislature to hold a special session on April 14th to consider consider a constitutional amendment banning partisan gerrymandering in the state permanently. Now, this proposed amendment would add language to the state constitution that would prohibit legislative maps that give a disproportionate advantage or disadvantage to one political party. Ever says that this proposal is straightforward. He says no tricks, no gimmicks, which is what you would expect from a Governor Evers, right, based on who he is and what he says. He says it simply is a ban on partisan gerrymandering and that lawmakers would be responsible for figuring out how to implement this. Now, constitutional amendments in Wisconsin, though, have to pass two separate legislative sessions, then go to voters statewide for approval. If it does pass in the spring, the next legislature elected in November would also have to approve it. Now, here's what I'm going to say based on what you said about the legislature and their long vacations. I don't, unfortunately, as much as I would love to see this pass in this state so we don't have to continue talking about gerrymandering and fair maps, I don't see Robin Voss regaveling in the assembly to take up this special legislation for Governor Evers. Now, if it was a Republican governor, I'm going to say he might consider it. With Governor Evers, I'm going to say that he absolutely has no intentions of doing this, no matter what the governor says or what the public would like him to do in this particular case.
Well, and it's sad because you've got two guys who are both leaving on their own. You know, Tony Evers decides not to run. Robin Voss decides not to run again. Just can we go out like, I don't know, co-workers,
right,
or a little cooperation just on your way out the door. Yeah. Don't worry, Robin, you still have your legacy. You still were the guy who obstructed all kinds of things,
right,
in Wisconsin. That's all right. But and Tony, reach across. Let's have an old-fashioned talk.
Here's what I will say. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said he supports the concept of addressing gerrymandering. Those were his words. But he criticized the amendment for lacking any specific details, also saying that he would be open to the negotiations. Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu has not publicly responded. Here's what I find interesting. Some Democratic lawmakers have voiced support for fair maps, but they have stopped short of endorsing this proposed amendment. And I find that fascinating based on the fact that the Democrats were able to make a dent in the Republican majority in the Senate and the Assembly because of the fact that those maps were redrawn and some of these districts were able to expand their reach, and the gerrymandering was able to, at this point in time, I don't want to say end because we're still a very gerrymandered state, but they were at least able to make a dent because of those fairer maps, and they were able to expand their reach a little bit. So I find it interesting that the Democrats aren't a little bit more supportive of this. And let's be realistic, if you're looking at the future, a fair map for the entire state is good for everybody. So that's not just a Democrat. That's just not a Republican talking point. That's good for voters and for anybody running for office. So I would say maybe, you know, get behind this a little bit more because voters want it.
I do agree. It's and this is going to be strange, and I probably won't say it too many more times. I get Robin Voss's point about no real specifics in the amendment. All right, if you're going to bring an amendment, bring it with at least some framework.
Yep.
Not say, hey, we're going to bring this amendment. It's going to say that we should stop, but then you guys figure it out. It's almost like, hey, we're going to bomb your country to get rid of a regime, and then you figure it out. That's, you know,
weird
all.
How all of it ties together at the end.
Yes. Oh, man. Kash Patel under fire again because of a decision he made that, boy, really, really played into what's happening this week. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. The news headlines continue. Good morning. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to get involved in the show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Kash Patel, a lightning rod for controversy, let's be honest, unqualified for his job, but yet he still has it. Last or 2 weeks ago, he was partying in Italy with the men's hockey team. And just days before the U.S. launched the, do you want to call it a military operation? Do you want to call it a war? I don't know. Technically, it's, if you're asking opinions, it's a war.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, Congress has not declared it a war, so it's a military. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm talking about. So the point is, Kash Patel fired a dozen agents and staff members from a counterintelligence unit that was specifically tasked with monitoring threats from Iran. Now, that's according to sources within the FBI and who know this thing. And you might say, well, were they not doing their job? Did they miss something and that's what led to the war? No, Jamie.
No.
The simple reason was all of these agents who were fired were involved in the investigation of Trump's alleged retention of documents in his Mar-a-Lago bathroom.
That's right.
So they were doing their job under the former director. They were following the rules of the FBI, investigating. Well, now they got to go. And then suddenly, hey, we're plunged into war.
Yeah.
Weird how that happened.
It's very strange. And the result of all of this is that Patel essentially hamstrung this D.C.-based FBI counterintelligence unit. They even have a special name, the CI-12, which handles cases ranging from the mishandling of classified documents all the way to tracking foreign spies operating on U.S. soil. It's kind of like this group of people were very, very important to the U.S. Intelligence Committee.
Yeah.
Now, multiple sources say that there is concern now inside the Justice Department and the FBI that counterterrorism, along with intelligence investigations in the wake of all of these military operations in Iran, could actually be hampered by a mass exodus of national security experts. It's not just people from within that are concerned. I'm concerned.
Yeah, This is, I think, going to be one of your phrases that you're tired of saying. Why don't we have people who are qualified in charge? You put a podcaster in charge of the FBI, and now he's getting rid of, and who knows if this is, I'm sure,
right.
Listen, he's not making any decisions on his own.
No.
He is carrying out somebody else's decree. But yes, I'm terrified too, because we've had people, and I'm sure these 12 have been with the Bureau for a while. They're career agents.
Right.
And all of a sudden, these people who know their job because they did a job you don't like because it might impact your boy, they got to go. And you put the whole, for the America First and the we're going to make this country safer crowd, boy, they're doing everything they can to make this country less safe.
But here's what people in this administration, I think, miss. FBI agents or anybody who works for the federal government does not personally work for the president. They don't specifically work for Donald Trump. They don't specifically work for Joe Biden.
I beg to differ.
They are government employees. They swear an oath to the Constitution. Their job is to follow evidence and enforce the law, not to serve one public figure, because government is not a privately owned business. How do we keep this country safe if we are continually gutting the very offices that have been designed to protect us as Americans? And this particular unit handled the counterintelligence. These are not abstract roles. These are highly trained roles, and these are real-world national security functions. And turns out that we now face, even before the attacks in the Middle East, we faced real national security threats here at home all the time. And now we've amplified that by these attacks on the Middle East. And this doesn't make me feel safer. This doesn't make me feel better. And it certainly doesn't make me feel like this was done with actual reasoning behind it. This was retribution.
Well, that last sentence, any real reasoning behind it. There's never any real reasoning behind it. It is all, as you said, retribution. It's all, you do work for me. You don't, that, because, listen, Donald Trump does not honor the Constitution.
No.
He does not believe in the checks and balances. So he doesn't care if you took an oath to the Constitution. Your real allegiance should be to him. And if it is not, we saw this with Hegseth into the Defense Department, getting rid of generals, people who have dedicated their lives to serving this country and making it safer, they're gone. Now counterintelligence, again, people who, they don't care who's, I'm sure, listen, there are some people just like you and I or anybody at any job who don't like their boss,
right,
who don't like the leadership. There's Republicans who work for the government. There's Democrats that work for the government. But from what I've seen and from people I know in law enforcement and in the military, it doesn't really matter who's up at the top. They still have this job to do because there's all of us in this country that they're trying to protect. And it doesn't matter, one person in the White House is not going to change their mission. Their mission remains the same. But to him and to Patel and to everybody else in the administration, that mission is not to keep us safe. It's to do what I say or you'll lose your job. And it doesn't matter about the rest.
And in Trump's first term, CI-12 was instrumental in tracking potential threats from the Iranian regime in retaliation for those 2020 drone strikes that killed their general, who was the then the leader of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in force. Iranian-backed actors have since been charged with plots to assassinate American officials, including plots to attempt assassination against the president of the United States that Iran has blamed on Soleimani's death. So just to keep in mind that these people are meant to also protect the people in office, too.
Where's Jack Bauer when you need him?
Nowhere, apparently.
Nowhere to be found.
It's 6:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. More to come. A civics lesson next on the Civic Media Network.
It is 6:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. I'm Jamie Martinson. And yes,
and I'm,
we get a civics lessons to. I'm very excited. I'm sorry.
I know. That's all right. I don't listen. If people don't know who I am now, they're not going to. They'll never know. It's a big surprise. I'm very enigmatic. We know that. But yes, it is time for a civics lesson, Jamie. You're very excited.
I am
going to. I've got my number two pencil.
Okay.
I have my black cardboard covered composition book. I'm going to be taking notes. Or like I usually did in school, I'll probably be sleeping in the back of the room. But either way, what are we learning about today? Just cheat off my notes.
It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, they always cheat off the smart girl.
That's
move.
Right. That's right.
All right.
There's been a lot of conversation in this state about school referendums. And we know that this year there's going to be as we get ready to go to the polls, there's going to be a lot of referendums on these ballots for homeowners and citizens in each of these communities to vote on. And that essentially means property taxes. And we thought it was a good idea to kind of explain how we got here, what these referendums are, why we have them, and how it's going to directly affect you. So we're going to start out with the most basic information this morning of what a referendum actually is, Brian. What is it? Well, this is when a school district asks its voters for permission to raise more money. Wisconsin actually limits how much districts can collect from property taxes and also from state aid. So if schools need more than the limit allows, they have to put it on the ballot. And there are actually two types of referendums. There's the operational referendum, which pays for everyday costs like the teachers, the programs, and the transportation. Very important for our kids, right? There's also a capital referendum, which pays for things like buildings, repairs, and major projects. And if voters say yes, then property taxes are going to go up in your community. If the voters say no, then districts are going to have to make some hard decisions, sometimes having to cut staff, maybe even programs. The bottom line is voters decide whether to raise the taxes to support their local school districts.
Well, that sounds pretty easy. Easily understood. So what do we... Where are we? Seem to have these all the time. What's the situation?
We do. And this year, we're going to have 72 referendums on ballots. There are 72 Wisconsin school districts that are going to referendum in April, asking for just over a total of $1 billion. So voters appear less supportive than they've been in the past. In fact, 60% say that cutting property taxes matters more than increasing school spending. 57% in recent polling say that they would vote no on a referendum. Now, 6 years ago, if you look at it in comparison, 57% of property owners would have said voted yes to these referendums. Brian.
I want to be one of the sweat hogs. So wait, could this be tied to the fact that the economy is really bad and people can't afford groceries and rent or their mortgages?
Yes.
And now all of a sudden we seem to get these all the time. If a referendum came to your district, you know, once every 10 years or so,
right,
maybe you could do it. But we also know the population in Wisconsin is getting older, which means people don't have kids in school,
right,
which makes referendums a much harder sell to,
yes,
those people, even though, yes, everyone could agree education is important. But sometimes you have to bring the focus inward and go, boy, I'm having trouble affording anything in my house.
Right.
The kids are going to have to make do. You know,
yes,
we're changing history in the books every day anyway, so it's not going to matter what they learn.
And that's an interesting point, because this year, 62 of these districts out of the 72 are literally asking for operational referendums because they need staff, programs, transportation, and technology. And the rest are asking to borrow money for these building projects, including in Sauk Prairie. Now, approval rates have been falling since 2018. In 2024, only 70% of these referendums passed, which was the lowest rate in a major election year in a decade. Now, the question then becomes, as you were talking about the economy, why are so many of these school districts relying on the referendums, right?
Ain't got no money.
They don't have the money, because these school districts rely primarily on state aid and property taxes, but state-imposed revenue limits, which were set back in 1993, actually restrict how much they can increase funding unless the voters approve a referendum. Now, to make this even more confusing, when it comes to those revenue limits, Wisconsin doesn't have one single statewide dollar cap. Instead, each school district has its own revenue limit.
Huh?
Right. So,
could you explain that? Is that going to be on the test?
Revenue limits were actually tied to inflation until 2009, and since then, funding has not consistently kept up with that inflation. You know, costs like transportation, insurance, utilities, salaries, the things that you need to run a school district and make sure that you have employees continue to go up. And so a lot of districts say that because they have declining enrollment, because of the inflation, as you brought up, because of the expiring pandemic relief funds and rising fixed costs, they now have financial difficulties. For example,
ooh.
Yes, Brian.
I'm going to let you finish.
Okay.
Kanye,
All right.
But I have a question, because I was talking to somebody who told me that the governor put in a 400-year veto,
yes,
that meant everybody was getting money for 400 years.
Well,
which is a long time.
Sort of. And we'll get there. Just know that the Appleton Area School District is asking for a $60 million operating referendum over 4 years, because they have a $13 million deficit and fund student support services. According to our good friend Gwen Moore, it's not mathing. Wisconsin Rapids, which might be listening to us this morning on WFHR, they are seeking $19 million over 5 years because their expenses are outpacing the revenue. Now, the 400-year veto, this is very important, because obviously we have been talking about this state surplus, $2.4 billion sitting in a surplus, which could alleviate a lot of this property tax discussion and provide some school funding. Now, during the 2023-2025 state budget, Governor Evers used his partial veto power to increase school district revenue limits by $325 per student every year for 400 years, right? And that was through the partial veto that the Republicans hate, because in this state, governors have that authority to cross out things and move things and then combine them into what they want them to look like. Now, with this 400-year veto, this isn't going to automatically raise taxes, but it does give districts the option to raise money locally. If state aid doesn't increase, the districts often have to make up that gap with higher property taxes, hence the referendums. Now, Republicans have obviously criticized Evers' 400-year veto. They've placed a constitutional amendment on the November ballot to limit a governor's veto power over taxes and fees. But school leaders from across the state say that that added flexibility helps from the 400-year veto and that $325 per pupil, but it doesn't actually fix years of funding that hasn't kept up with the inflation. And right now, if state aid stays flat and these costs continue to rise, which, let's be realistic, they're going to, then local taxpayers are going to start feeling it. And a lot of districts are holding these information sessions really just to try to explain what their referendum would cost an average homeowner. And for anybody who's wondering, this will all be on the ballot in most of these 72 districts on the April 7th election. And your early voting will start on March 24th. So start looking for those informational sessions.
Ooh, yes, Ms. Brian. Martinson, yes, Ms. Martinson, yes, Ms. Yes. Martinson. So, okay, like I'm listening to you and you said they are short $1 billion, and you said the government, the state, has $2.4 billion extra money. So I kind of was listening, but I was doing math.
Yes.
And that leaves, like, if they gave that whole billion, that would still leave almost $1.5 billion still sitting there, right? So couldn't they use that and then set, maybe I'm going to use this, this is on my word of the day calendar that my mom and dad gave me, a moratorium on referendums for like 5 years. You take that $1 billion and then you say, okay, here, we're getting everything cooked with this billion, but then you can't ask for a referendum for at least 5 years. Could they do that?
They could do that. And here's the thing.
I'm going to hang up and listen for my answer.
Here's the thing. School funding reform was a major topic this legislative session. Robin Voss had brought it up. Senate Majority Leader LeMahieu had brought it up. Here's the problem. The assembly gaveled out before any bipartisan resolution was reached. And now, instead of a statewide fix, instead of using some of that surplus money and putting it all to good use, the decision is landing squarely on the voters, community by community, in just about a month. Instead of actually doing the work to figure this out, we have left it to the communities and potentially higher taxes once again for all of us as we look around the state. 72 districts with referendums. Think about that for a minute. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Especially when you have the money. Especially when you have the money sitting there. There was something you could have done to fix this and to help these communities. Instead, you gaveled out, you're on vacation because you want to campaign, and instead of putting the fix in and doing the work, here we sit having this discussion yet again for another year throughout the state of Wisconsin.
And there was the debate about, all right, if we're using the surplus on recurring bills, that's not good because we don't know if there will be a surplus down the road. We don't know if we lock into having to pay X amount every year for the foreseeable future, that could run out and then we're going to be in trouble down the road. But there are certain things that you have to, okay, can we get up to snuff with this fix that all these districts, everybody needs this money, but they all have to know you got to make it stretch. If you can't make repairs on your old buildings, you can't build anything new now. You've got to just, you know, for the next X amount of years, you can't do anything. We'll get you up to code. We'll give you the technology you need to keep the kids learning. We'll do all of that, but you got to hold off now. That's all we got. There's no more.
I mean, and honestly, when you look at these communities, it doesn't matter what size community you're living in this state. We all want strong public schools. We know that they provide jobs. We want safe buildings for our kids. We want good teachers. We want opportunities for our kiddos to succeed. The harder question is, at what cost are we willing to do that? And this is why the support for these referendums is slipping, because you pointed it out so well earlier. So many families right now, and it's not even the families who have kids in the school, it's the entire community who feels these increases. So many people right now are stretched by these rising property taxes, the higher costs for just about everything else. So it literally becomes a question of, where do we draw that line, and when do people quit wanting to feel that pinch? And it's unfortunate that this particular legislative session is over, especially when the Republicans made such a big deal and had so many conversations and went to the press talking about this 400-year veto and property taxes and school referendums and how it had to stop, and absolutely no movement whatsoever before they decided to gavel out for the year to actually take care of a real problem in this state.
Mark chiming in on the text line. You can too, 855-75-CIVIC. He's in Prairie du Sac. Maybe get rid of vouchers that take money out of the public schools. When I was a kid, our neighbor sent his girls to Catholic school on his own dime. I know my parents paid for Catholic school on their own dime, too. A Wisconsin man is going to jail for forging threats against the president.
This is such a weird case. This was so weird.
Very weird.
It's 6:48 right now. You are listening to Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:52 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. To get a hold of us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don't forget to follow us on our brand new social media channels. Oh, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. It's fantastic. Just search for Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You'll be on there, and you can always listen to everything on the Civic Media app. People have been asking me, where can I listen? Your ears. But then I think, and I'm like, no, get the free Civic Media app. It's free. And you know how I know it's free, Jamie? Because Parker typed it in all caps.
He did. There on the stream,
free.
If you're watching. Yes.
It's very important that you know this is free.
It is very important.
Just remember, you get what you pay for. So I don't want to hear any complaints. It's free. Just relax. We were mentioning this before we went to the break. This is one of the craziest cases I have ever heard. And Friday, a judge in Milwaukee sentenced a Wisconsin man to 16 and a half years in prison. He forged threats against President Trump as part of a scheme to get the victim of a robbery case that was up against him. He wanted to get that guy deported, so he was forging things. There's a lot of twists and turns, and I had to read this a couple times to go, oh, now I see what's happening.
I remember when this happened. This happened back in January of 2025 because it was one of the first big immigration cases under this new administration. And there were so many supporters of this because Kristi Noem got involved by putting these letters on social media with the threats. And so if you remember way back, I know January of 2025 was just over a year ago. 10,000 years ago. That's what it feels like in the scheme of a timeline. But this Milwaukee County jury actually convicted 52-year-old Dimitri Deshaun Scott in January of identity theft, witness intimidation, bail jumping, and reckless endangerment. Now, court records show that in September of 2023, Scott attacked Ramon Morales Reyes, who is a Mexican immigrant. He was riding his bike in Milwaukee, and Scott kicked him off of the bike, stabbed him with a box cutter, and then stole the bike. And at the time, Scott was already out on bail in another case. So after his arrest, Scott wrote several letters from jail pretending to be Morales Reyes. Now, those letters threatened to kill then-presidential candidate Donald Trump at a rally. Of course, as we mentioned, federal immigration authorities then got involved. They arrested Morales Reyes in May after he dropped his daughter off at school. Kristi Noem posted the photo. She put some of the letters online. Oh. She went all out on
Kristi,
this, right?
Evidence and time be damned. I got to get this out on socials right now.
Yes.
Fact checking for the birds.
Investigators later determined that Morales Reyes could not have actually written those letters because he doesn't speak and write English well. And the handwriting didn't actually match his. Weird how those facts align things.
That's the first scene in any TV crime drama. They look and they go, This handwriting doesn't look right.
I watch a lot of SVU. I could have even figured that part out. Let me be real.
So you don't have to be on Dragnet to get to the bottom. bottom of this.
Authorities also uncovered jail calls where Scott discussed mailing letters and trying to get immigration officials involved so that his own robbery case might be dismissed. He later admitted to writing the letters. Now, Morales...
Who says criminals aren't smart, Jamie? I've laid out my plan on monitored phone lines.
I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but you know, hey, he was doing what he had to do, I guess, weirdly. Morales Reyes was eventually released on bond. He's now living with his family in Milwaukee. He's applied for a U visa, which, by the way, can take up to 8 years for approval. This is available to crime victims who cooperate with law enforcement, which is that's what a U visa is. Now, the Department of Homeland Security has added a note to its online post clarifying that Morales Reyes is no longer under investigation for threatening Trump, even though he remains in the immigration proceedings because, of course, now he's been flagged to this administration. So now they're keeping an eye on him. Scott received that prison sentence of 16 and a half years after all of that. It's
5 on the intimidation, 10 on the endangerment count. He also got an extra little bonus, a little bump, something extra for the effort. 882 days already served on a bail jumping charge. This guy is the class act, and he's many smart. He is a smart guy.
Smart, I guess, would be in the eye of the beholder. It depends on how you're looking at it. Here's the thing that bothers me most about this case is Morales Reyes is a guy who's lived in the U.S. since the 80s, worked as a dishwasher in Milwaukee, married, got 3 kids who are U.S. citizens. Court records show he has absolutely no criminal history in the state of Wisconsin, and now he's sitting through the immigration process, which we know in this country does not exactly play well for people who came here illegally. And that's the part that I think really bothers me out of all of this is because one guy decided that, you know, I'm not going to go to jail. I need a bike. That now we're sitting here and this other guy has been flagged by the U.S. government.
It also goes to show a much bigger systematic problem with DHS and how they handle immigration and how they handle deportations, which, again, deportations are the rule. We've always had deportations. We've always had a lot of deportations. But these guys don't bother. They get rid of all the legalities leading up to snatch and send away. There's a lot of procedural things that have to happen before that. And the simple fact that you've got a guy who can barely speak, read, or write English, and the handwriting is way off, but you don't take that 10 minutes, that one extra day, because everything has to be on social media. That's that's the biggest difference with this administration. Other administrations, you'd wait. They would wait. They would make sure
until they actually have the facts.
Yes, because you look even dumber when you keep putting things out and having to retract them. Or as we're going to talk about in a while, where nobody knows what the actual message is, and you just
say
things.
But
it doesn't matter. We were first.
You just say things, and it all works out, I guess, in your behalf, on your benefit. Coming up, we're going to actually get into a little bit more about Iran. Here's some of the comments the president and his administration made yesterday. It's 6:59. I'm Jamie Martinson. This is Daybreak.
And I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.